WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Oh my goodness, yes, it is that time again, good people. 1 o'clock has rolled around here on WKAR AM 870, and welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, as always, Al Martin. On this beautiful Thursday, even though it's still frigid and cold outside, it's good to see the sun, okay? But welcome to the show. Again, we have a ton to get to. I want to remind you all that don't forget about our Rose Bowl special. I am so excited, so thrilled to bring this to you all. Again, it will be airing tonight at 10 p.m. Me and my incredible team have been working day in and day out, putting it together, and we finally finished up around 9 o'clock or so last night, and the finished product is ready for you all to view and enjoy. So don't forget, I mean, we were down in there in California. We have a lot of interviews, a lot of behind-the-scenes features to bring you all, of course, including the game and a lot of dancing. Rich Homie Quan, of course, makes an appearance on the show. It's going to be a great one, okay? So just remind you all, 10 p.m. tonight, on WKAR-TV, check your local listings for the specific channel because it varies with every provider. You don't want to miss it. I am certainly thrilled about it. I can't wait to watch it myself, to tell you the truth. So tune into that. And you know what? Something really interesting that came out today. Of course, yesterday on our Barbershop Wednesday segment, we talked about the whole athletes being involved with politics, and that discussion was sparked due to Dennis Rodman. Now, Dennis Rodman, he actually played a basketball game with former NBA players against North Korean basketball players. And Dennis, a really, really close friend to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. And we played up a little bit of that interview from Rodman's sit-down with CNN anchor. And Rodman kind of going off. He seemed kind of discombobulated and really, you know, everything that Rodman, every point that he tried to make, no one really could follow. It was a really weird and disturbing interview. And today, Rodman has issued an apology. And he has come out and apologized about his comments and the way he acted during that interview. He used profanity here and there. And he came out and said, quote, "I want to apologize. I take full responsibility for my actions. It had been a very stressful day. Some of my teammates were leaving because of pressure from their families and business associates. My dream of basketball diplomacy was quickly falling apart. I had been drinking. It's not an excuse. By the time the interview happened, I was upset. I was overwhelmed. It's not an excuse, just the truth." So, and Rodman also issued an apology to Kenneth Bay. Of course, Kenneth Bay, as we mentioned yesterday, Kenneth Bay is serving 15 years in North Korea for an incident or a conspiracy against the North Korean government. And, you know, Americans are really, really, really upset about it. And Rodman, you know, made some statements during that interview that were really disturbing. But anyway, basically, Rodman came out and admitted that he was drunk and he shouldn't have been making any political statements. So that's basically what happened. Interesting story. Google that one if you hadn't had a chance to and if you missed our show yesterday. All right, well, on today's show, we have a full play for you. We're going to talk about the Pistons and their latest slump. The Pistons just can't buy a game right now. Also, Al Borges being fired from the University of Michigan as their offensive coordinator. And later on, we have a special Throwback Thursday for you. We're going to talk a little Lions and who their next coach should be. So a full plate, and if you want to call in at any time, give us a call at 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527 to express your thoughts on any of today's topics or anything you hear about on the show. Of course, you can also comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. All right, well, let's get this ball rolling, and let's get to our Current Sports Quick Hit headliners for this January 9th, 2013. All right, ESPN.com's NFL Nation conducted anonymous surveys of more than 320 players to find out exactly who is the most feared player in the NFL.
Cutler rolling and looking. After him is DeAndre Levy. He broke the tackle. What a run, and he got hit hard. Flag on the the play. And Ndamukong Suh gave him a forearm to the back.
Right to the back of his head is what it looked like. And if it was to the back of the head, it's clearly a penalty. I'm telling you, Ndamukong Suh, when he gets to the quarterback, he wants to wreak havoc.
Oh, yes. I mean, how could he not make the list, right? Defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh led all players as the most feared player in the NFL with 61 votes. That's actually 19% of the vote. And wide receiver, this is surprising to me, wide receiver Calvin Johnson followed with 58 votes. Now, no other player received more than 30 votes, and 48 players had at least one vote. So Ndamukong Suh and Calvin Johnson are two of the most feared players in the NFL, and Ndamukong Suh topping the list at number one with 61 votes. And I'm sure that on Calvin's end of things, because he's such a nice guy, classy guy, it's just the fear of Calvin Johnson just burning you down the field for one miraculous reception to the end zone, okay? But with Suh, it's more to it, okay? Ndamukong Suh actually released a statement, quote, "If it's feared from the context that they don't want to play against me and that they're worried about how I may affect the game and affect the offense, it's definitely appreciated. It's definitely seen as a plus and a positive. Guys have respect for you, just like guys have respect for Calvin." So there you have it, Calvin Johnson and Ndamukong Suh, two of the most feared players in the NFL. All right, Michigan will hire Doug Neusmeyer as offensive coordinator to replace fired Al Borges. Now, Neusmeyer has spent the last two seasons as Alabama's offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach under Nick Saban. The Wolverines will make Neusmeyer, who is 43 years old, one of the five highest-paid coordinators in the nation. Now, Michigan fired Borges earlier Wednesday after three seasons with the team. We're going to dive into that later on. All right, Spartan fans, Pat Narduzzi is safe for now. Louisville has hired Bobby Petrino for a second stint as football coach of the Cardinals. As they announced that yesterday, and we broke that on Current Sports at the top of the hour yesterday as well. Petrino is expected to receive a 7-year deal. He will succeed Charlie Strong, who became coach of the Texas Longhorns earlier this week. Now, Petrino got his start as head coach at Louisville, leading the Cards from 2003 to 2006 before leaving for a brief stint as coach of the Atlanta Falcons.
And it is a 5-man rush. Manziel retreats. Look at this. He's still on his feet and heaves it deep. Oh, my gosh.
Can you say magic?
Yes, miraculous moments like that from Johnny Manziel. Johnny Football will hopefully now be occurring in the NFL. All right, in a move that everyone saw coming, Texas A&M QB Johnny Manziel has declared himself eligible for the 2014 NFL Draft. Arguably the most exciting player in college football, Manziel was the first freshman to win the Heisman in 2012 and posted over 4,000 yards and 37 touchdowns last season, completing nearly 70% of his passes. He also rushed for 759 yards and 9 TDs. Johnny Football is slated as high as third and as low as 12th in various mock drafts in that first round. All right, an attorney for Jameis Winston's alleged rape victim said her client absolutely plans to sue both Winston and the Tallahassee Police Department. Now, this is Pat Carroll, the victim's attorney. She said this, quote, "Absolutely, you're going to see a civil lawsuit. You cannot have law enforcement that is not held accountable," end quote. Now, the case, which stemmed from that December 2012 incident, all the way to December of 2013, did not have enough evidence for a criminal trial, according to the Florida State Attorney's Office. Now, a civil trial with a different standard of proof could absolutely yield different results than a potential criminal trial. So it seems as though Jameis Winston just cannot shake loose this incident, folks. So the rape victim is not lying down, folks. They're definitely pursuing other charges there. Okay, Detroit Pistons. Man, I'm feeling this one. All right, the ice cold Pistons lost to the red hot Raptors 112-91 in an ugly game at the Air Canada Center. With both teams hovering around 40% shooting from the field, and the Raptors turned 16 turnovers into 25 points for an easy win, the Pistons have now dropped 8 of their last 9 games and are quickly falling behind in the Eastern Conference standings. They stand in 9th place as of right now behind the Brooklyn Nets. The Raptors have won 8 of their last 11 games to combine to climb back to 500 on the season. The Pistons visit the 76ers on Friday before hosting the Phoenix Suns on Saturday night. All right, Grand Ledge and Okemos. Grand Ledge defeated their CAAC Blue rival Okemos 55 to 44 yesterday in boys basketball. Highlighting the game were the the Orwatch sisters, Lindsay and Hannah, who posted a combined 32 points for Grand Ledge. And on Wednesday, Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux, and Frank Thomas were elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Legendary Houston Astro Craig Biggio fell two votes shy of the required 75% election vote. Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, and other steroid users all dropped in the ballot vote, uplifting the effect of the PED era in Major League Baseball. So there you have that. And this is a really interesting story. Dan Le Batard, Miami Herald columnist and ESPN personality Dan Le Batard, gave his Hall of Fame vote away in protest of athletes linked with steroids being selected to the Hall of Fame. Le Batard went on to say, quote, "I don't want to be part of the present climate with reform of any way. Now, given the climate, doing this has more impact than my next 20 years of votes as sanctimony bars the Hall of Fame door on the steroid guys." So Dan Le Batard gave his vote away actually to Deadspin, the Deadspin site, and actually had fans vote on who they thought should be on the ballot. Interesting protest right there, Dan Le Batard. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and comment and share your thoughts on any of those, you can call us at 517-355-9527 and share what's on your mind. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and, of course, tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Also want to note that Calvin Johnson, he was, of course, voted to go to the Pro Bowl and play in the Pro Bowl, but it looks as though Calvin won't be playing in that game due to his knee. He will be sitting out, and Alshon Jeffrey will be taking his place in that regard. All right, well, Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky now join me as we dive into our discussion part of the show, and, of course, some of the biggest news. One of the biggest stories of the day have to be Al Borges being fired over at the University of Michigan. Now, the Wolverines, they went 7-6 this season and lacked offensive consistency left and right. The offensive line was among the nation's worst, actually ranked 105th in sacks allowed, and get this, 121st in tackles for loss allowed. Just terrible, terrible, terrible production offensively, guys. Really dive into this, Alex and Matt. I tell you what, when you really pick this apart, it didn't surprise me that Al Borges is going to be fired. First of all, I think Brady Hoke, certainly after finishing the way Michigan did this season, his job was definitely on the hot seat. And I remember saying this, if Brady Hoke, especially after that MSU loss, when things really, really started to get out of control, spiral out of control for the Wolverines, Brady Hoke's seat really became hot. And if he did not get fired, he would definitely have to fire some of the coaches around him in order to save his job and try to have a different level of production next season for that team. Now, Borges, in my opinion, he didn't know how to coach a running quarterback. That's something, if you look back at Shoelace, when Shoelace is part of the team, there were some stints there where Borges struggled when you know, calling the option, calling different plays that played in Robinson's favor. He questioned whether Robinson could pass down the field, which I think everybody did. And, you know, this season, though, I think was, if you look at last season when Denard came in and, Robinson, excuse me, and you look at how the production of this season for him, it really was an up and down year for him. But it doesn't help when you have an offensive line that, you know, is as tough as paper. But Borges, in my opinion, did not know how to coach those two quarterbacks. And if you look at every game, most of the games they lost this season, he would always approach the podium and blame it on the player execution and not accept full responsibility for it, in my opinion. And you could just see it spiraling out of control. But, guys, this move was not a surprise to me at all. And, you know, we'll see how – if Michigan doesn't produce next season and next year, I think Hoke, his head will roll, period.
Yeah, I agree. It you know, kind of looks like a save-my-skin sort of transaction here. And, you know, they go and get Nussmeier and they let go of Borges. And Borges is kind of the scapegoat, it looks like, at this point, you know. the problems with Michigan aren't exclusive to the offense. You know, they put up, what, 14 in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. They got 31 dropped on them and a bunch in the first half. Their defense wasn't great at the end of the year either.
No, not at all.
But, you know, Greg Madison is such a big name. I don't think Brady Hoke's going to make a change there. It's easier to kind of cast off Borges, who's gotten so much heat all season. I mean, they were definitely feast or famine. You know, they had the big games against Ohio State and Indiana, and then they'd come against Michigan State and Nebraska and just lay absolute eggs.
Right.
When I look at how they kind of get away from him, and to your point about him not knowing how to coach a mobile quarterback, really it's just Michigan not knowing what they want to be. And they keep – every year they come into the season saying, we're going to get back to Michigan football. And mm-hmm. and that idea, it's ridiculous. They don't have the personnel to do it. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to get a square peg into a round hole and finding that when they don't have success, it's easier to just cast this guy off. I'm not saying that he was a good, you know, fit or that he, you know, deserved to keep his job, but I don't think he is the sole reason that they struggled this year.
Yeah,
I think it starts from the top.
Yeah, this was a compilation of many, many things. And definitely not putting it all on Al Borges. It just, when you look at it, Hoke, in my opinion, doesn't really know offense. And looking at Hoke, let's be honest here. Hoke is a defensive guy. He's always been a defensive guy. When it comes to the offense, that one area that he really struggles with, and to see the team struggle as bad as they did this season, a change had to be made, point blank, period.
For sure.
And Borges being let go, I wasn't surprised when it happened.
Well, who knows what Hoke knows? He doesn't have a headset on ever. You never know what he actually knows because he's not even in on the plays.
Yeah,
biggest criticism he gets. But what I'm saying is, yes, Borges was definitely the guy to go. They're not going to let go of Greg Madison because of his NFL career. They're not going to let go of an assistant or a quarterback's coach. They had to let go of someone. So Borges ideally was a perfect candidate. And for me, I think the biggest problem with Borges is not necessarily that he didn't know what to do with running quarterbacks. He didn't know what to do with running quarterbacks when blitzes came. Because if you looked at a lot of the plays, a lot of these option routes, a lot of them were just made from linebacker blitzes. It wasn't even a front seven push because this Michigan offensive line was very solid. A lot of really good talent on that offensive
line. Michigan's offensive line?
They're going to have a top 10 pick in Taylor Lewan.
I need to read this again, Alex. I mean, they were ranked 105th in sacks allowed.
They also led the nation in negative plays.
Negative plays. Look at the Michigan game. Michigan State game, excuse me.
And you're enhancing my point. It's because they didn't know what to do when blitzes came. That's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily offensive line is
a lot of those
weak.
Sacks that Michigan State had in that Michigan game, I mean, they weren't all blitzes in that game. A lot of those had to be just the line crumbling, you know,
sure,
at certain points. And Devin Gardner ate grass, I mean, that entire game.
Right, but that's the number two defense in the country, though.
They had multiple games where they had negative yards.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is it's not that the offensive line was that bad. If you look at their offensive line,
offensive line was terrible, Alex.
No.
I totally disagree with you.
They're going to have a top 10 pick this year in Taylor Lewan.
I'm talking about this season. This season, Taylor, that offensive line was ridiculously bad. Again, 105th in sacks allowed, Alex. That's inexcusable. And especially at a school like Michigan, you know, with top 10 recruiting classes. Yeah, exactly. They get top 10 recruiting classes out their butt every single year. You know what I mean? I mean, come on. They had to be better this season. But Hoke, I think if they have another bad year, Hoke is his days are numbered. He is definitely on the hot seat for next season. We'll see what happens. And I think right now, the final draw definitely was that Buffalo Wild Wings bowl game. And granted, you know, that Michigan defense did play. They played awful, too. Mm-hmm. It was just a totally bad, just terrible game. That was the last draw for him, and I knew something would happen. So, and there you have that. Again, if you want to call in and share your thoughts on that, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. All right, shifting gears really quick, guys. Subject that really pains me. You guys know how big of a Piston fan I am. I bleed red, white, and blue just as much as I bleed green. And the Detroit Pistons have now lost 6 straight and 8 of their last 9 games. Breaking it down, what I see, because I got a chance to sit down and watch the replay of the Raptors game after I got home last night from putting together the Rose Bowl special. Anyway, Jennings is on a terrible, terrible shooting slump. And he, looking at that game, him being the guy, him being the point guard being the quarterback of the team, he can't shoot that bad. Jennings cannot shoot that bad and the Pistons win. It's just getting atrocious right now. And the Pistons, another thing that I've harped on all season, they cannot guard the three-point line. It's just something about, I mean, guys do not get out fast enough. There's no hands on anybody's face. If you look at last night, the Pistons, right, and on the contrary, the Pistons are statistically the worst three-point shooting team in the entire league right now. So they can't guard the three-point line, and they can't hit from the three-point line. In today's league, you got to hit from the three-point line if you expect to win games in today's league because teams live and die by the three-point line. Many teams, many successful teams out there. If you look at it, though, the Raptors last night drained 11 triples. 11. The Pistons were 4 of 16. That is terrible. That cannot happen. Monroe was held scoreless in the second half, and it's something we alluded to earlier this week. If there's anybody that the Pistons are going to consider trading, in my opinion, it should be Rodney Stuckey first, but it may be Greg Monroe is quickly climbing up that list.
I feel like you'd be all right
just putting Rodney Stuckey on like a sheet of ice and pushing him off to sea. And just
I would love that.
Just letting him go.
If I got the opportunity, that would be the highlight of my life.
But here's what I'm saying, Al, okay. Who are they going to get? What kind of value do you think
he has? I don't
know,
man.
What does he have?
Because, you know, the rumors have been floating out there about Monroe possibly being on the trading block. And I kind of saw a glimpse of that last night. I mean, Monroe, it's just those three with Drummond, Monroe, and Smith. I don't think they'll ever be able to gel with each other. I mean, it's just too many. I mean, Monroe and Drummond, they both want to be in the paint. Josh Smith doesn't know whether he wants to be in the paint or whether he wants to shoot. And when he does shoot, he just jacks up crap left and right and can't hit the side of a barn. I mean, I don't think those three will ever coincide. And if you're going to get rid of somebody, it's got to be Monroe, I think. Just looking at the game, just analyzing it from last night's perspective. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I agree because there's just too much of an overlap in skills in what they do. And like you said, the Pistons are the worst three-point shooting team in the league. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, A, Brandon Jennings is taking terrible shots, and B, Josh Smith is taking terrible shots, which includes any shot he takes outside of 20 feet.
Right.
Get near the basket,
right.
Josh. You are,
exactly.
You know, maybe one of the more talented players, at least in the conference, you know, if not the league in general, he has to do what he does well, and when they have those three guys on the floor, there's no space. There's no space to get into the paint.
Yeah.
It's just too much overlap, and I think, you know, if you look at maybe, I mean, everybody talked last year about potentially trading Monroe for Rondo or somebody like that. Now that they have Jennings, I don't know if that's still in the cards, but, I mean, if they could get a player of his caliber out of that deal, I wouldn't be too upset. I just think,
yeah, me neither. Yeah.
I mean, even though Rondo's not going to help their shooting at all, he at least is a leader on the floor and will set guys up.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's just, they're stagnant right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, they're just so stagnant. Oh, Alex, you got something?
Oh, no, I mean, I agree. The only thing I would say about the Rondo trade with Jennings is if Rondo comes with Jennings, then are you going to kind of play like a small ball lineup? You're going to put them at 1-2 and then you move Smith to the 4?
Yeah, I don't know if the Pistons are going to go for another guard if they are going to trade again. I mean, Will Bynum, I believe he's still in contract too right now. I think Will Bynum signed a 2-year. He just signed a 2-year contract. I don't know. I don't think they'll go after another guard. They'll try to find a forward. The question is, I mean, who's out there right now?
Right.
But you know what? From a coaching perspective, I really respect I really like what Mo Cheeks did during if you guys recall, the Washington Wizards game. The beginning of that third quarter, when he realized that Josh Smith, I mean, he was playing terrible. Again, he was in a slump. I mean, just shooting terribly. He actually benched Josh Smith to come out the third quarter. Josh Smith didn't like it and actually released a statement. He thought it was unfair that Maurice Cheeks had benched him at the beginning of the third quarter. But I think, you know, Maurice Cheeks putting his foot down and saying, and this is the highest paid player on the Pistons roster. This is Josh Smith we're talking about. Him benching Josh Smith and making that move, I think it sent a message to not only the players but to the fans as well that, hey, Mo Cheeks is going to try some things here, and he's a no-nonsense type of guy here. He's about his business. He's going to make the moves that he feels as though is going to put the Pistons in the best position to win. And I really like that move, and I think it sent a message. I think that Josh Smith in the end saying that it was unfair, that was just being a crybaby. You know what I mean? You got to play better.
And that's part of the things that we talked about when he first came to the Pistons.
Right.
You know, he is one of the sulkiest you know, moody kind of players in the NBA. He will kind of take himself out mentally of games. I mean, that was his MO in Atlanta. That's why Atlanta fans weren't particularly hurt to see him go.
Yeah.
And you know, Brandon Jennings was kind of the same way. They're just kind of these up and down guys, not always given, you know, full effort, not always locked in.
Right.
And we're already seeing those red flags kind of rear their ugly heads, and it's January.
And that's January, worrying. Yeah.
I feel like Joe Dumars has got to be thinking, we got to right the ship here before the end of the year. Because if they miss the playoffs, I think he's gone too.
Oh, I think so too. I think Joe Dumars' head will roll if they don't make the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, and that was one of the biggest reasons why he made these quote-unquote big moves. I mean, you know, with getting Jennings here and hiring Mo Cheeks and whatnot. And this has to work. It looked good. Don't get me wrong. They're in the slump right now. I don't think it's too late for them to turn it around, even though they are in this slump. But it's got to start soon. It's got to start soon. Right now, we are talking about the Pistons being in ninth place in back of the Brooklyn Nets, a team that we were just dogging at the beginning of the season because they look terrible. You know what I mean?
And look at the Raptors.
Yeah, Raptors, exactly.
They've won like 8 out of 11
out of nowhere.
And,
yeah.
You know, they trade Rudy Gay.
Right.
And they get better. And that's, you know, some of the things that you have to consider. Maybe you give up a talented player, but if it tinkers with the chemistry and improves how the team gets along and plays together, then maybe you can have situations where it is addition by subtraction.
Right.
So maybe if they deal Monroe, they just look for picks or something. Who knows? I mean.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I totally agree. And right now, another one final point here, Pistons got to play defense better, man. And they got to play defense better in the second half specifically. They have been terrible. I mean, last night they led, you know, at halftime. And then they came out in the second half, things totally go awry. So they got to play better in the second half. And, you know, and Stuckey is a guy who alluded to that last night. I mean, saying, hey, we go ghost in the second half. And, you know, all right, we'll see, though. We will see. All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, of course, I want to remind you all, our Rose Bowl special, folks, will be airing tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Alex and I hit the streets of California to bring you behind-the-scenes footage and interviews highlighting that historic MSU win in the Rose Bowl. We even talked to Atlanta rapper Rich Homie Quan. Again, it airs tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. And when we come back, you will get to hear from a guest from tonight's show, MSU Athletic Director Mark Hollis. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. Mark Hollis, the athletic director for Michigan State University, is a man who I like to call the hardest working man in athletics. Always reaching for new and different endeavors to take on when it comes to the green and white, we caught up with Mark down in Los Angeles to talk about the MSU football team making it all the way to the Rose Bowl. And if there's anyone who sees the bigger picture of this moment, you better believe it's him.
It's great for the football program, but more importantly, great for the university as a whole. To get here, to have Southern California, the sunshine, but you look at this sea of green at the pep rally, we're expecting more than 40,000 to be at the Rose Bowl tomorrow for the game. And just, it's surreal. It's something that you prepare for, dream of, and until you get here, it's kind of a pinch me moment.
I got to ask you, I mean, looking at, you know, all the fans down there. You talked about 40,000. I mean, and reading some reports coming out about, you know, tickets selling out and, you know, having to compromise and get more tickets for alumni. I mean, you had to be pulling your hair out trying to get this thing organized, right?
We really did, and we worked through quite a system. We had the original allocation as a participant. Commissioner Delaney was able to get us a few more from some of the participating schools. And then some of our fans went out on their own, and they got creative. I think a few got them from the Stanford allotment. So, Spartans are pretty creative in the process, and that's going to get us from 23,000 up to maybe 40, 50,000 in the stadium.
Unbelievable, Mark. And now talking about this football team, you know, now getting to the Rose Bowl, first time since 1988, a truly historic moment. I just want to really talk about Coach D right now, to look what he's done to this program and to get it to this level, this essence right here. I mean, talk about what he's done and how proud of you are of him.
Well, I think the most important thing, if you remember back to the day he took the job, he talked about everybody moving in the same direction. And that's easy to do when you're in times of adversity or times of being down. When you create this success, this is the period of time, more so than anything else, that we need to pay heed to what Coach D'Antonio said. It's a time to remain together, to continue forward. And, you know, his plan has come together just as he's preached it. And I'm very proud of him. I'm very proud of our staff. I'm very proud of the whole athletic department that has to put the little pieces together in order to develop this kind of success. It's well beyond what happens on the field, on the practice field. It's the whole department. But Coach D, Coach Izzo is a big part of this process, as are many of the people that played here before. When I walked back from the championship game, my two phone calls were two of our former quarterbacks, Hoyer and Cousins. And I called both of them and I just said, thank you for giving us this opportunity. You are the reason, part of the reason that we have this success. And I think that's the moment all of us have to realize is we all have individual desires, individual needs, but collectively we can have unlimited success, not only here in Pasadena, but in the future.
Mark, I got to ask you, when you hear Coach D, you know, one of the quotes that stuck out to me before we made the trip down here was that MSU is a destination, not just a stop. When you hear about, you know, him saying things like that, that's got to be comforting for you.
It really is, and you know, I think part of that is making sure the AD gets the resources to ensure that continuity is in place. And you know, we've gone through those conversations. Those are behind us, and you know, we feel very good about not only having a great football staff, a great basketball staff, but great coaches and great leaders across all of our sports. So it's great to hear Coach D say those things. Tom Izzo, you know, I think as he's turned jobs down, has developed that same Spartan for life mentality, but it's good to have coaches that are pursued. You don't want to be at a university where your coaches aren't being looked at by other programs or professional sports organizations. So I view that as a good thing, provided that they're Spartans for life.
That is so true. Before I let you go, Mark, being down here in sunny LA, what have you been doing to enjoy yourself and kick back and relax? Have you been kicked back and relaxed? Have you found time to do that?
We had one day at Disney where I had time to enjoy myself, but other than that, it's been getting ready for the masses that have arrived. You know, I think for our staff, what we talked about is our enjoyment's going to come in reflection after this event's over, after we get back to East Lansing and you see the pictures, you see the videos, you see all the good that came out of a football team having this kind of success. And that's where our true enjoyment will come. It's Coach Izzo always says, it was easy to get to that first one. Right. It's how do you sustain and how do you keep this level of success on the forefront for the future. And you know, come January 2nd, that's what we'll be working on, is how do we get right back here again next year and into the future.
Mark Hollis. Yes, that was Mark down in Los Angeles, California. Mark is, of course, the athletic director for Michigan State University. I just got a text from Mark. Mark will actually be our current sports TV guest on January 23rd. So thanks a lot, Mark. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, just go to our website, WKAR.org, and sign up. We tape live at our WKAR TV studios each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. So, Mark, thanks a lot, man. And I look forward to sitting down with you. And you know what? There was so much. We shot so much down in California preparing for the Rose Bowl special that is airing tonight on WKAR TV. And, you know, some things just didn't make the cut. One of those things being our 12th man segment. Of course, our 12th man segment that we have every week on Current Sports TV is when you, the live studio audience that we have at our TV studios, get to fire out your questions to our guest for that day. And, you know, we had the idea of, you know, having our 12th man segment down there in California, you know, with the players and asking fans off the street to ask questions to the players and, you know, to see what their responses would be. Well, this didn't make the cut for tonight, but we're going to give you an exclusive behind-the-scenes look at this one. This is, you know, this is Fofa Noti, Benny Fowler, and Tony Lippitt, of course, for the MSU football team, as you guys had some pretty interesting questions for them, starting with Fofa Noti and, of course, that crazy do he has.
I have a question for you. One fan wants to know, how in the world do you condition your hair? How do you keep your hair tight and right?
That's a great question. Right now, it's not conditioned, so you know, I'm definitely lacking in that. But, you know, my girlfriend went to cosmetology college, so she's real good about you know, making sure, you know, this thing is kind of, you know, make sure I don't have split ends or stuff like that. And, you know, when she talks to me about stuff like that, you know, I don't understand
it. It's important.
It. Yeah, but, you know, I'm a L'Oreal, Garnier Fructis type of guy. You know, anything to help slide this helmet on. But I definitely think with that. But I tell you one thing is if you want a forearm workout, try brushing it.
Drop right here. It's crazy. Right? It's
horrible. It's horrible.
You got to perm that thing, right?
Ooh, no, I don't know. Perm. You know, I'm not sure about the perm.
Jerry curl.
I definitely got the natural curls going in, but you know, I don't know. I don't know about a perm.
Favorite artist and why?
Favorite artist?
Artist.
Song artist.
Song artist.
Oh man.
Long list.
Jay-Z, probably. I have to go with Jay-Z. He's just everything he's done for the music industry and. His lyrics, I mean, it paints a picture for you.
He's the greatest rapper of all time, you think?
Oh, yeah, no doubt, without a doubt.
One fan wants to know, what is Tony Lippitt's pre-game snack?
Pre-game snack, like the night before the game or?
The night before the game, hours before the game, right before the game, what are you eating, man? Is it candy? I saw you just chowing on some candy.
Right? Yeah, the night before the game, I usually be eating like, I like to eat Teddy Grahams. I eat these like these gummies, like these Lifesaver gummies. Yeah, I don't know why, but like every time like I leave my house to go to the football building or anything like that, the day before a game, I always stop at the gas station and grab some of them. So I always stop by and grab some Lifesaver gummies.
Lifesaver
I don't know.
Gummies.
They be good. They be good at the end of the night because I mean, I just be hungry, but they be good though. So that's one thing I eat.
Lifesaver gummies. You guys ever had those Lifesaver gummies? Oh,
they're delicious.
They are off the chain. I feel you, Tony. I feel you, man. All right. That was a behind-the-scenes exclusive right there, our 12-man segment. I wish didn't make the cut for tonight's special, but you got to hear it right here on our current sports radio show. All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we're gonna, of course, we have Throwback Thursday, and there was one infamous moment that happened on this Thursday a while back from Randy Moss. And you don't want to miss that and so many more moments. A lot happened on this Thursday. We'll also talk some Lions and, yeah, don't go anywhere. Current Sports will be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. Man, Jimi Hendrix, man. I love whenever Aaron plays Jimi Hendrix. I think that's Crosstown Traffic right here. My man. I love that song. Love that song. All right. Welcome back, folks. Again, want to note that Calvin Johnson is coming through my feet again. Calvin Johnson had decided to pull out of the Pro Bowl due to his knee injury. Do you guys watch the Pro Bowl? I think the Pro Bowl is so boring.
Does anyone watch the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, does anybody watch the Pro Bowl? I mean, it's so boring. Is there anything that can be done to save the Pro Bowl? Why watch the Pro Bowl?
They used to have those skills competition things.
Those are interesting.
I'd watch those.
I miss them all the time.
They had like kickers playing horse from like all sorts of different angles. Like that's cool.
That's
like
cool
I want to, you know, I don't want to see guys giving 50% effort in a game where the number one goal is to not get hurt.
Right.
I'd rather see them like showing off their skills, like doing crazy things that maybe aren't in the context of a game.
I agree.
Like
I agree. I don't want to see a game. Yeah. I mean, granted, these are the best of the best that have been voted to the best of the best. But watching the Pro Bowl is just
take a nap.
I'd rather watch the grass grow. You know what I mean? Now, I do like watching the NBA All-Star game. I love watching that because you got dunk contest, you got skills challenge. I think, and you can argue with me on this, out of all the sports, I really think the NBA has the best All-Star pro, I think the NBA has it.
Hockey's pretty good. Yeah,
the hockey's
good. I haven't watched the hockey. I haven't watched the hockey.
Fastest
like
slap shot.
It's better than NBA.
Yeah. I think it's
better
close.
Than dunk contest?
I think it's close.
I don't know, man. I don't know how sliding the puck through on the ice can beat.
Yeah, but that's because you're not a hockey guy.
Watching Blake Griffin like soar through the air for. Speaking of Blake Griffin, did you guys see his dunk last night? Oh, he had a crazy dunk over Chris Humphreys where he was so high in the air that he just threw it in. It's one of those dunks where he was so high. The Superman Dwight Howard dunk. Oh, I was showing Aaron before the show. All right. Anyway, all right. Speaking of Lions, let's get back on track here. Speaking of the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions, of course, are in their head coaching search right now. And, you know, many names have been thrown out there. Munchak, I believe, he just interviewed with them. Guys, I want to dive into who you guys think is the right guy for the job. I'll start off. I really hope that the Lions do hire. And it's really sticky right now. We talked about this. Due to the fact that the Chargers are still in the playoffs and you have to wait till the season is over and to make any moves. But I really think Ken Whisenhunt will be great for the Detroit Lions. My reason being, specifically when you look at it, a lot of the Lions' turmoil and destruction down at that stretch of the season, you know, as they started to really dwindle down and get in desperation mode, had to do with the fact that, you know, who I think is overrated. Matthew Stafford had way too many turnovers, forcing the ball left and right, interceptions, the sidearm throws. I mean, just taking too many risks. I mean, a lot of that, you know, I want to put it all on Matthew Stafford because it certainly wasn't all on him. I mean, you had Reggie Bush fumbling left and right. I mean, there were multiple errors. The defensive secondary for the Lions was not great at all. But Matthew Stafford turning the ball over definitely contributed. And looking at Ken Whisenhunt, who is the offensive coordinator right now for the San Diego Chargers, and his work, his track record with QBs and adding a new, just kind of revitalizing QBs' careers. If you look at Kurt Warner, I mean, I think he did a great job with Kurt, a guy who late in his career was searching for another level of athleticism or another level of play. And, you know, he brought that. Ken Whisenhunt did a great job working with him. If you look at Phillip Rivers now, I think Ken Whisenhunt has done a great job, outstanding job with Phillip Rivers, who I think is one of the best QBs in the league. I think bringing that to Detroit and starting there with hiring him would be a great move. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I got to agree with you, and it's kind of boring, but I think after, you know, my number one candidate would have been Mike Zimmer, who is
the defensive coordinator
in Cincinnati. And, you know, they had a top five defense, even though they lost Geno Atkins, who's the best D lineman in the league.
Was Zimmer's name brought up? I don't know if
I mean, he's been tossed around, but he hasn't interviewed or anything like that. And, I mean, but the longer they go, the fewer coaches are going to be available. I mean, right. Jay Gruden just went to the Redskins.
Yeah,
I mean, guys are finding new places to go. But Ken Whisenhunt, you know, you look at his tenure in Arizona, and you're right. I mean, he revitalized Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner was left for dead when he went to Arizona, and they, you know, make that crazy run to the Super Bowl, almost win the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, he did a heck of a job that year, and then, you know, they declined a little bit after that, but, I mean, look at the guys he was playing at quarterback. I mean, Derek Anderson, John Skelton. I mean, he's a very good coach, but he's not a miracle worker. You're not going to make those guys into winners.
And, you know, he surprisingly took a lot of heat after Warner, of course, left, and you had guys like Skelton come in.
Yeah, it's like
it was just like, what do you expect him to do?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I didn't really like that.
Like,
at
it's
all,
okay if you have Larry Fitzgerald, but you need somebody to get him the ball.
Right. Exactly.
And they never made that move, so I think that'd be a good move, especially because usually when you fire a coach, you want to move to a new coach who has a different specialty. And you move from the defensive-minded Jim Schwartz to an offensive-minded Ken Whisenhunt. But
right.
The biggest thing for any potential hire has to be discipline.
You stole my point. Yeah, that was my next point.
Number one through five on the board of things you want.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree because, I mean, if you look at the Lions, discipline – I mean, and we talked about, you know, Schwartz being your head coach is a reflection of the team. And Schwartz, I mean, he was a loose cannon. I mean, turning around at fans, and I don't care how much he wants to deny it, you know, during that moment, you know, at the end of the season where he turned around and I think, you know, not going forward on that, you know, with 23 seconds left and had timeouts left and the fans booed him and he turned around and said whatever he said. I mean, just those type of antics. If you got your head coach acting that way, I'm pretty sure there's a lot more players that are doing that or maybe worse. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know. You need a guy to come in and establish discipline. A team like the Lions who had way too many penalties, and that's another thing. Discipline, discipline, discipline. That's what that comes down to. Those little penalties, it's the D word. You know what I mean? It's the D word. And that has to be nipped in the butt from the get-go. And Ken Whisenhunt, just reading up on and different people who know Ken and have worked under Ken, he's a no-nonsense type of guy from their account. You know, he's a no-crap type of guy. He puts his foot down, and that's the type of guy the Lions need. And I think he would be the best fit. I don't know, Alex?
Yeah, no, he definitely puts his foot down. And here's the thing. He has a proven track record with Rivers and with Warner. And something Narduzzi always says is, we put the guys in position to make plays, but they make the plays. So, and there's always so much confusion with coaches in general, whether, oh, whose fault is it? Look at with Borges. Is it all Borges' fault? We don't really know. We don't really know. Maybe the players just aren't making the plays. So for the Lions' standpoint, it's so hard to even pick this out because they have so much talent there on both sides of the ball. You just don't know who's really going to work, what coach is going to mesh well with each player. And with the track record, it just seems like Wisenhunt's the right guy. Mm-hmm. Not because of what he knows, but everywhere he's been, it's worked. It's worked.
Right.
So
right.
That,
I
for
agree.
Me, is the reason why.
Yeah, we'll certainly see. Again, if you want to weigh in on this, give us a call, 517-355-9527. We have about 15 minutes left in the show, 517-355-9527. And it's Thursday, folks. You know what that means, Throwback Thursday. It's the point in the show where we look back on this Thursday at an historical perspective when you talk about sports. And before we get to Throwback Thursday, I believe we have a caller, Jim from Lansing. Jim, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Okay, got a question about the Rose Bowl. First of all, when I was 1,000 years ago, I was a lineman in high school, and us linemen would all the time tackle people, and they'd give the credit to the linebacker. Mm-hmm. Who on the Spartan defensive team? Who is number 89?
Number 89.
Calhoun.
Shalique Calhoun. Yeah, Shalique Calhoun. Yep.
Because from the video, you know, he had the guy on that 4th-and-1 play that everybody makes so much of. He had the guy all wrapped up and stopped, and then the linebacker flew over the top, and that's all people can talk about. Now, I'm not saying the linebacker didn't play it appropriately and everything, but nobody has mentioned number 89, who had the guy all wrapped up and before the linebacker flew over the top. And I was just, in reading and hearing about it, nobody gave credit to the lineman that basically made the stop. All they could do is talk about the linebacker.
Right. Hey, thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it. Yeah, and you know, you're speaking about Shalique Calhoun. I mean, Shalique is a guy. I mean, he's a star. Mm-hmm. Shalique Calhoun is a complete stud out there. And you know, looking back at that moment, the 4th-and-1. I mean, the reason why I think that why you know Ellsworth is talked about so much in that moment is the story behind it. Of course, Max Bulla. A leader, senior captain, him not even making a trip down there to Cali to be a part of the team in the Rose Bowl, the culmination. It could have been a great culmination to his great career. And you got a guy like Ellsworth, you know, and he comes out of nowhere. And, you know, this coach is trusting him with that position and throwing him in there. And the guy of all people, Max Buller's replacement, makes that stop. That storyline is like a Cinderella storyline. I think that's why Ellsworth has been talked about so much.
Yeah, know? I agree. I mean, it is a storybook ending. And, right. You know, to see a guy go over the top, too, even though he has him wrapped up, it's a lot flashier when they meet, you know, head-to-head at
exactly.
The top of the pile.
Looks cooler.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Looks
absolutely.
Cool.
That's what matters, right?
That's what matters. You look good. You know what I mean? All right, well, Throwback Thursday. Let's get to Throwback Thursday where we look at what happened this Thursday in the world of sports. Matt, what we got, man?
All right, January 9th, busy day. A lot of Baseball Hall of Fame inductions, a couple of Super Bowls. We might skip most of that. Let's go back to 1811.
Oh, my goodness. 1811.
1811.
Oh, my goodness.
In Musselburgh, Scotland.
Okay, Musselburgh, Scotland.
The first women's golf tournament was held. I wish I could have dug up and found the winner, but apparently all the contestants were just the town fishwives. So they just decided, hey, guys are out at sea. Let's go play some golf. And they did. They held the first women's golf tournament.
Wow, that's
1811.
Interesting.
Had to go back a ways
it's
to find that
It's a long time
one.
Ago, man.
Oh, yeah. Up to 1918, so we're going to jump about a century here. Okay. The NHL announces a new rule that permitted goaltenders to leave their feet while making a save. Previously, a penalty was called if a goalie sat or lay on the ice to stop the puck.
Wow, what's wrong with that? Laying on
the
ice.
That's akin to football introducing the forward pass, basically.
That's pretty big.
Because goalies could, you know, move around, lay on the ice, down on their knees.
Right.
I mean, that revolutionized everything. So that's
definitely
a big moment in NHL history.
So that rule allowed them to, it gave them more mobility, I guess.
Absolutely.
Because,
that's why, you know, people sometimes identify a guy as a stand-up goalie because he's always on his feet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
right.
How they had to play at one time, and now they can, you know.
Oh, look at that. I'm learning stuff when it's
Throwback
Thursday.
You got to keep in mind, too, back in 1918, they're not wearing a lot of headgear.
No,
so
I can just imagine.
It's kind of risky to, you know, sprawl out on the ice and take a puck to the head.
Do guys do that?
Did they?
Do they do it now?
Do they do it now?
Do
they absolutely do it now. Oh, Totally. I've never seen it. All the time. I mean, watch a Dominik Hasek highlight film, and the guy is on his back more than he's on his feet. All right, let's move on. Too much about hockey. Okay.
Yeah, too much.
Number three, 1958. In basketball, Oscar Robertson at Cincinnati scores 56 points in a game. Seton Hall scored 54.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. The Big O, man.
Maybe the most
good.
Overlooked
yeah, he is.
NBA great ever.
He's in my top 10. My top 10 list, without a doubt.
And he never gets mentioned. It's too bad.
Yeah.
Big O. Okay, number four. The NFL in 1962 bans the grabbing of face masks. It's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
Still relevant today.
Yeah.
Still happens all the time. Number five, 1972, the Los Angeles Lakers end their 33-game win streak. We've talked about that streak a couple of times on the show. They lose to the Bucks, 120-104. Guess who led the Bucks in scoring?
The Big O?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, that's when Kareem was
with Milwaukee.
Lou Alcindor.
He had 39 points. Yeah. Wow. To beat the Lakers.
Wow.
Was he Lou Alcindor then, or is he still?
I think he might have been Kareem
at that point.
Oh, was he?
I don't know exactly when he changed his name.
Nice.
It's right there. Kareem, okay, 1973, next up. The Philadelphia 76ers on the other end of, streaking in sports, they began a 20-game losing streak.
Wow.
So
that's just bad.
A day they'd probably like to forget.
Yeah.
Okay. We got two more here. In 2001... I'm going to quiz you guys on this one, too. Center Patrick Ewing became the 13th player in NBA history to score 24,000 points. My question to you guys is, what team did he play for in 2001?
So I'm
going to
guess it's not the obvious answer. It's the Knicks.
It's not the obvious answer.
Supersonics?
Wow, I don't know who.
Alex. Out of nowhere. Nails it.
I didn't know he played for Seattle.
Of course.
There you go.
Yeah, that was a big year for him.
Wow.
2001.
Big stuff, man. Okay.
Good job, Patrick Ewing. Yeah. All right. And then last but not least, maybe my favorite Throwback Thursday item that we've ever had. because I was watching this live and I have not forgotten it. It's pretty much.
I don't think anybody will forget this.
Painted my perception of Joe Buck just because I thought it was so ridiculous.
Right.
Okay. Randy Moss. I don't even know if I want to ruin it. Let's just play the clip. Aaron.
Moss. Randy Moss is in for a touchdown.
Oh, Al Harris playing off. Bit up on the route. And Randy Moss, without even really being able to run, as he shoots the moon to the fans here in Green Bay.
That is a disgusting act by Randy Moss.
Oh, boy.
Disgusting.
Disgusting
act, man.
Okay, so Randy Moss scores a touchdown, obviously. Yep. Goes to the uprights, turns his backside to the Packer crowd, and I guess fakes pulling his pants down to moon them.
Yeah.
Doesn't actually pull anything down.
No, doesn't
down,
actually do it, yeah.
All in good fun, and right. And Joe Buck.
Just disgusting.
That is
a disgusting
act.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, what do you guys think about that? I don't know.
He was fined $10,000
okay. For
the act.
That was going to be more than that, okay.
I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Me neither. When it boils down to it, I think it's fun.
Yeah. What happened to having fun?
That's the thing. The NFL, I mean, the fun of, first of all, the game of football and basketball, I could go on and on about that. The game is changing. I don't know. Like you said, the fun of the essence. Like, I used to love seeing T.O., to see what crazy celebration he had up his sleve this week. And watching Chad Johnson do the same. Chad Johnson had some really, really good ones. But, and now you can't even do that. You can't even spike the ball anymore. You know what I mean? And it's like, dude, come on. I mean, it's just, you just score a touchdown, hand the ball to the ref, and go to the bench. I like seeing touchdown celebrations. I think, when it's Randy Moss mooning, quote-unquote, the crowd. I mean, come on, man.
Plus, it's like, it's Vikings.
He didn't really do it.
Vikings-Packers, big rivalry. He's messing around with the fans.
Right.
I feel like, $10,000 to Randy Moss at that point, it's a slap on the wrist.
Right.
But
Dropping the bucket.
Yeah. I mean, for Joe Buck to react like that, I thought was a little bit over.
By the way, I love Joe Buck, though. He does a good job, man. He's a good announcer. I like Joe.
He's too dry for me.
Yeah. You think he's too
me
dry?
Me, too. I agree with Matt. I think he's a little too dry.
I like Joe. I don't know. Maybe it's the voice. I like his voice. Yeah. All right. Well, 5 minutes left, guys. Really quickly, I want to hit on something we briefly alluded to at the top of the hour. Dan Le Batard actually giving up his vote to Deadspin, giving up his Baseball Hall of Fame vote to Deadspin, and what Deadspin actually did was pretty creative. They actually put a bunch of names, on their website and allow fans to you know, to choose basically what Dan Le Batard's vote would be. And they, I forget what name they chose, and Dan put it in. But he's been taking a lot of heat on giving up his Hall of Fame vote. Really quickly, I just want to get my thoughts on it. I don't think it's a big deal. When you look at it, what Dan Le Batard is really angry about, and I agree with him on this, players that, and we've had this discussion countless times on the show, players that have used steroids who have been, you know, if there's even an inkling of them using steroids, they're not being, you know, allowed to go in the Hall of Fame. The writers know that, and those who vote know that, and they don't even give, you know, this is really a turning point because Dan Le Batard is a guy who advocates for those guys. He thinks they should be let in, and he's so upset about the whole system and thinks the system is rigged and you know, it's tainted in a way that, you know, he doesn't even want to be involved with it, so he decided to do this. I saw Tony Wilbon and Mike on PTI. They totally bashed Dan Le Batard for this. Mike and Mike, I mean, they had a different view on it. They thought it was kind of creative. I don't see what the big deal is. I thought it was, you know, if he looking at the foreseeing this thing, if he doesn't want to vote and feels this way, I think he should just not vote at all, period. But in the end, I don't think he should be getting bashed as much as he is by so many people in the media this morning. I don't know.
Yeah, and the thing with baseball is, and especially the Hall of Fame,
it's
is that it's,
sport.
It is held up on a pedestal. You know, it's untouchable to you know, disrespect the, you know, the grand spectacle that is baseball Hall of Fame is it's almost, you know, sacrilegious. It's
right.
A big deal. You can't do it. I don't think, you know, in this day and age, if, let's say, Dan Le Batard isn't that big of a follower of baseball, why not kind of outsource your Hall of Fame ballot to people who do care about baseball, which apparently is the Deadspin community. I think it's creative, too, and I don't think it's a huge deal. I don't know how much difference it would have made in the voting process.
Yeah, I mean, he's one vote.
Minimal.
But if you have that mindset that you know, my vote is just one vote, then, I mean, it kind of
dilutes
the whole.
That's a slippery slope.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope that you got to be careful. But, Alex, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I think the act of trying to spark the protest with giving up a vote is, like, a good idea. But there's something about a vote in Cooperstown, which I think you briefly alluded to, Matt, that it's a very, very distinguished
right. It's an honor. Yeah.
And for baseball, with such historic history with the sport of baseball, the fact that he let the vote to just, like, even in particular Deadspin and letting the fans vote, it's a little bit different of a feel. Because you don't see fans voting for a lot of other awards. It's almost like reopening the pot a little bit and kind of re-skewing the hierarchy.
I can see that argument too, because you're talking about Deadspin here.
Yeah.
This is a website that's
and Deadspin evolved.
As far as credibility with sports, Deadspin. You're talking about the comparing Deadspin to the MLB Hall of Fame. I mean, that's I see what you mean.
Yeah, and my last point is if you wanted to give it up, fine. But I think that making it more of a public act to Deadspin and then it skewing out to the fans, I think was a little bit overboard. But I do think that. Yeah, I think writers might maybe follow suit. They dropped all the people that use steroids. That all dropped in this year's voting. So
yeah, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, it was a hot topic this morning. I'll tell you that. All right, well, we are out of time. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in and calling in on today's Current Sports. Again, the Rose Bowl special airs tonight, 10 p.m. WKRTV. You won't want to miss it. It's going to be a great show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic day, and be easy, people.